ಹರಿ ಹರಿ ಗೌರ ಪ್ರೇಮಾನಂದಿ Welcome all the devotees. I am very happy that we have amongst ourselves today His Holiness Jayadeva Swami Maharaj, and he has been in ISKCON since 1968, when he was only 17-18 years old. Maybe you have more details about him. How? Maybe a few words about. I don't know more. Yeah, you can read, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. Jayadvaita Swami Maharaj, editor, publisher and teacher, is a disciple of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of ISKCON International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He served as an editor or assistant editor for nearly all the books of Srila Prabhupada published during Srila Prabhupada's lifetime. He received initiation from Srila Prabhupada in 1968 at the age of 19. Practically the first task assigned to him was to staple booklets. He later went on to typing manuscripts, transcribing Srila Prabhupada's dictations for books, and then typesetting, proofreading, managing book production and editing. He has lectured extensively at colleges and universities, especially in the United States. In 78, he accepted the renounced order of life, sannyasa. In 85 and 86, he spent a year and a half traveling with a party of pilgrims on Padayatra, a journey on foot, through various states of India, stopping in different town and village every night. In 1987, along with Dhanurdhar Swami and Bhurijana Dasa, he co-founded the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education. Since 1988, he has served as the director of Srila Prabhupada's publishing house, the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. From 91 through most of 98, he served as editor-in-chief of Back to Godhead magazine, for which he had been an assistant editor for several years. Recently, he has served as editor of a three-volume translation and commentary for Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita, a 16th century Sanskrit philosophical and devotional work by Srila Sanatana Goswami, and Sri Krishna Leela Stava by the same author. He does not initiate disciples. Apart from his services in publishing, he travels widely teaching about the philosophy and culture of Krishna consciousness. Practically, he has traveled all over the world in preaching the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
And presently, he is very busy with his project in Africa, the whole continent. He is distributing books and headquartered in South Africa. And so we welcome His Holiness Swami Jayadeva Swami Maharaj with three Haribols. Haribol! Haribol! Haribol!
Thank you all very much for coming. A few items of practicality. Maybe some of the men would like to fill in. There's some extra space there. Aye, some of the men. Not men with children. Yeah, but then people also this side can't. Yeah, we have some. Yeah, get your company. And if who has a mobile? Let's see your mobiles. Yeah, so silent mode, please. As mentioned, I'm working in Africa. It's a very poor place. So anyone whose mobile rings, I'll accept it as your contribution and sell it for Africa. And I think we can leave off the photos also. Cameras can go into the pockets, please. Yeah, it becomes distracting. And who has the off button for the children? This is a big house. They have a place to play. Garden outside or some room for them, because they'll not be Generally, children don't like my lectures very much. I don't blame them.
All right, we have Kartal. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi jana vallabha giribara dhari Jaya gopi jana vallabha giribara dhari Jashodanandana Rajajana Ranjana Jashodanandana Rajajana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Parivraj Charja Stotra Sri Srimad A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Raj Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sakaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinath Sham Kunuradha Kundigiri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Tham ki jai, Namadeva Tham ki jai, Jagannath Puri ki jai, Ganga Mai ki jai, Jamuna Mai ki jai, Tulsi Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Samaveda Bhaktavrinda ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, Gaur Premanande. I think I could ask you to move up a little bit. Aage aaye. Toh aage. Just because more people may come and then they need a place. Thank you all very much again for coming. Om Agyanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam tathati shapadantikam pandeham shri guru shri jata padakamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam shagrajatam sahagana raganatan vitam stam sajivam Shadvaitam Shavatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kulpitarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
yeah. I don't know, it's useful, but it seems like it's creating a draft directed exactly at me. You can do it with the louvers keep down or something? That would be good, because they're just shooting right at me. Try that. Not possible. Okay. It becomes too hot. And this fan is not doing anything evil, so... All right, we'll just stay wrapped up.
Probably easier for me to adjust.
The Gulf is practically the coldest place I come to. Well, I was asked to speak something this evening about Srila Prabhupada nectar, which I guess means experiences with Prabhupada. It's not something I do all that much because my tendency is to remember Srila Prabhupada in context. If there's some subject matter, then what? What do you want to do? Let's do it and be done with it. And we've resigned ourselves. We're just going to live with it. Whatever it wants to do, we'll let it do. We won't worry about it. If things get really bad, I have a wool chatter. Maybe if it gets worse, I'll borrow a parka from somebody. I think we'll make do. So when there's some subject matter, then we think of Srila Prabhupada, what Prabhupada taught about that subject, maybe something about some incident. But if you just, so that I can do very easily, but if you say, could you just talk about Prabhupada, it becomes difficult. What am I supposed to say? Just telling a story or two. That's just me, because there are other devotees, they love telling stories about Prabhupada, and I love to hear them also. It's just the way I'm put together that I don't remember things that way. Anyway, but since you asked, I'll try to do my best. Just in that context, one time Prabhupada was asked about his Guru Maharaj, and Prabhupada said, he was a Vaikuntha man, what can I say? Another time, it comes to mind, I was on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada in San Francisco, and there was one devotee, Krishnadas, who was a very young boy when he joined. and who at an early age went to Germany to begin, practically he was the first, he and another devotee, to begin our activities in Germany. And he later drifted away somewhat and was out of the association of devotees. But at this particular time, he was drifting back in the other way toward the association of devotees. And Prabhupada was quite affectionate to this devotee, liked him. And anyway, so he came back, and he was on this walk. There was some discussion, and toward the end of the walk, somehow the discussion came to separation from Krishna, maybe separation from the spiritual master. And this devotee, Krishnadas, said, Srila Prabhupada, you must always be feeling separation from your Guru Maharaj. And Srila Prabhupada, as he was getting in the car to leave, he said, that you do not require. Unpacking that a little bit, Krishnadas was trying to get Srila Prabhupada to speak about this subject, you know, how you feel in separation from your spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada basically told him, none of your business. That was at least my understanding of what Srila Prabhupada meant when he said, that you do not require. It reminds me of something else. When I first joined in Boston, or after I first joined in New York and I was initiated, I was sent up to Boston where I got to serve Srila Prabhupada for a couple of weeks as assistant cook and general helper. And one time, the devotees in Boston, this was very early, this is 1968, so the devotees had gotten one little book, or maybe two or three little books, from a well-known publishing house in India that publishes material about Krishna and Puranas and Ramayana and so on. And there were some little booklets by the head of the publishing house. And the devotees wanted to know if it was all right to read these. Was it authorized? And so they gave me the books to show to Srila Prabhupada and ask him, since I was staying at his house serving. And I showed them to Srila Prabhupada and asked if devotees could read them. And Prabhupada said, it is not required. But from where I came from going to school, there were two kinds of subjects. There were required subjects, and there were elective subjects. So Prabhupada said that they're not required. So then I asked him again, but is it okay if they read them? And again, Prabhupada said, it's not required. And so again I asked him, yes, but could they read them? And I finally sort of got the idea that if it's not required, why do it? And that it's really, it meant no. But I wasn't used to Prabhupada's way of putting things, or really it's an Indian way of putting things. So it's not required. There are so many things like that. In Boston one time, I was sitting outside of his room. Prabhupada in the morning sometimes, he would, in his room, he'd sit and he'd just chant some bhajan. Sangsara dava naladi tadoka tranaya karun. Just by himself he would chant different bhajans. So he was chanting like that, and I was sitting outside of the room, you know, like listening. And apparently Prabhupada knew that I was there, so he called out, Jaya Dvaita. So I came in. Yes, Srila Prabhupada. You were hearing? Yes, Srila Prabhupada. Very good. When I was the assistant cook, the Prabhupada was being served by that at that time by a grihastha couple, Gorsundardas and Govindadasi. And Govindadasi was quite frail girl, lady. And so she was having trouble keeping up. So that's why I was brought in as assistant cook. But we weren't doing very well because in this house, the stove was electric. And cooking chapatis was a difficult business. Because there's no regulating it. It starts off cold, and then it becomes too hot. And there's no flame to burn to blow up the chapatis. So it was bad. And we were cooking chapatis, but every day they were wretched. And Srila Prabhupada was complaining also. So, and we were explaining, well, Srila Prabhupada, it's electric stove. And so Prabhupada told us that you make the dough, and then when you're ready, you call me. So then Prabhupada came in to the kitchen, little house. And first thing he did was he took a pan from the stove and turned it upside down. So that now he had the heat rising and he'd get even heat for cooking his chapatis. And then he was cooking chapatis. Maybe some of you know the system, how you can cook like a whole stack of chapatis at once. So Prabhupada, we'd never seen such a thing. But Prabhupada was cooking one chapati and then putting another chapati and flipping and having two chapatis and then became three chapatis and like cooking a stack of eight chapatis. So there's always a new chapati going on, always a finished chapati coming off, always a new side hitting the burner. It was, for us, it was like magic how expertly Prabhupada was doing that. So then it comes time to, and Prabhupada was cooking them so fast, we couldn't keep up. We're rolling, and Prabhupada was saying, faster, faster. Two of us rolling. And then, so then you have to blow the chapatis up. So Prabhupada took the grill, you know, the up from inside the oven, put it on the remaining burners on the top of the stove, threw his chapati on top of the grill, blowing up perfectly. That reminds me of another story. One time, Prabhupada had another assistant, Harikesh Swami, who traveled with him for some time. And there was a similar thing. I forget what the reason was. Maybe, again, it was electric stove or something. Chapatis weren't blowing up. And Prabhupada was complaining. And finally, again, Prabhupada said that he would come in. So Prabhupada came in. And the first chapati he made didn't blow up. So in her case, she was like... Well, you know, I couldn't do it, but you can't do it either. Then Prabhupada cooked the second chapati, blew it up perfectly. Prabhupada took it and threw it in his face. What else will I tell you? Yeah, one incident in New York. Prabhupada was leaving. I forget where he was going, but we were at Kennedy Airport in New York City, and some devotees, the devotees had rented or arranged for the VIP lounge, and as many devotees as possible, there were many devotees then, I crowded into the lounge to be with Prabhupada, and someone gave Prabhupada a picture of the deity, Radha Govinda, New York deity. So Prabhupada accepted the picture. And he's there in the lounge. There was some, like, a little table or something, so Prabhupada put the picture on the table. And someone gave Prabhupada a garland, so Prabhupada put the garland around the picture. Then Prabhupada's someone gave Prabhupada some fruit, some watermelons and this and that. So Prabhupada put the fruit in front of the deities. Then someone gave Prabhupada some incense. So then there was no place to put the incense, so Prabhupada took a little watermelon off the plate, put the incense in the watermelon, and put that in front of the deities. So this whole VIP lounge became a very nice temple. And then Prabhupada said, now chant Hare Krishna. So every place can become transcendentalized. And Prabhupada showed that example. On that same occasion, there's room up toward the front. In fact, there's a lot of room toward the front. Yes, some others can take advantage. We have prime real estate here. Thank you. On that same occasion, it was an evening flight. And while we were all there gathered, Gopal Krishna Maharaj came in. At that time, he was in his Purvashram. He was a married man. So he came dressed in suit and tie, coming directly from work. So he offered obeisances and said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm very sorry, I'm coming in my karmi clothes. Prabhupada said, not karmi. He said, karma yogi. Anashrita karma palam karyam karma karotiya. Sasanyasi chi yogi. You know that verse? Anashrita karma palam. A person who's not attached to the results of his work. Karyam karma karotiya. But who works because it's his duty to work. Not forgetting sense gratification, but he's carrying out his prescribed duty for the service of Krishna. Sa sannyasi ji yogi cha. He's the actual sannyasi and the actual yogi. Na niragnir na chakriya. Not the person who doesn't do anything. I'm a sannyasi, I don't do anything. No. The person who acts for the service of Krishna. So Prabhupada said, not karmi, karma yogi. One time, in the early days, some of Srila Prabhupada's disciples started a printing department, a printing press. It was located first in Boston. It later shifted to New York. And when, of course, later it became more practical to print outside because we started printing big numbers of books and it made more sense to have the regular printers do it. But in the very beginning, we had this press, ISKCON Press. So Prabhupada came to Boston and when he came, he toured the press. He was looking at the machines and looking at all the different things going on. And Prabhupada, at that time, he said, this is the heart of ISKCON. And Prabhupada said, and you know who is in the heart? Yeah, Krishna. And then one devotee said to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, you're the heart of ISKCON. Well, that's how it went. If you said, Prabhupada, you're the heart of ISKCON. And Prabhupada said, and this is my heart. Then he said, and you know who is in the heart? That's Krishna. Actually, Srila Prabhupada always gave great importance to printing and publishing of books. We were discussing in the car today that one time Prabhupada said, what will your 3 minutes preaching do? But if he gets a book, it will change his whole life. Prabhupada often told, not often, several times, often told how his spiritual master had personally instructed him, if you ever get money, print books. The occasion was that one devotee, very dedicated devotee, had given had built a temple in Bagh Bazar in Calcutta. He'd become, I forget what his business was, but he went from being a very small man to being very wealthy and dedicated everything. So he built this temple, very gorgeous temple. But Prabhupada, Guru Maharaj said to Prabhupada that since we've got this temple, now the men are fighting over who's going to get which room. He said it would be better to sell all the marble from the temple and print books. He said, if you ever get money, print books. So Prabhupada, actually he said another time, he said, everything I learned from my father, practically. Chanting Hare Krishna, worshipping the deity, Jagannath Rath Yatra, everything. He said, this I learned from my Guru Maharaj, printing books. Our Krishna consciousness movement is very authorized because it's based on these books. It's not a sentimental movement. Srila Prabhupada always used to make this point. It's not something sentimental. We just make up something or we say some attractive words. But it's based on the science of Krishna as presented in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and other authentic literature books of the Goswamis. So Srila Prabhupada was very keen. Even that was his first project before he even came to America, was publishing this Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he came to America, and again, printing books, distributing books, and giving so much emphasis. He said, you can keep one man in the temple and send everyone else out distributing books. There's one man to see to the deity, one person. Everyone else can go out and distribute books. The temples in those times, some of the temples had, hundreds practically of devotees, Prabhupada said, can all go out and one person keep for distributing books. So, and then in different languages, Prabhupada was very keen. As many books in as many languages as there are. And he said that when I publish a new book, I feel like I've conquered an empire. He was very pleased to see new books published. It's famous, but maybe I'll tell about it anyway since I was involved, that in 1970-something-five, maybe, Prabhupada came to Los Angeles. The ISKCON Press, although we weren't printing, all the pre-press work we were doing, the stuff that now you do on a desktop computer, in those days there was so much equipment that you needed to do the typesetting and then make films for the printer, negative films, and so many things, page layout. Now it's all done on a laptop, but in those days it required rooms full of people and machines. So we were doing that in New York, and then we shifted to Los Angeles. And shortly before we shifted, we purchased new typesetting equipment. We'd been using these two machines made by the IBM company, which now people couldn't imagine using machines like that. Every time they had little... This is such old, ancient technology. It's like telling about the pyramids in Egypt. But there were like little golf balls which had the letters on them. And every time you changed, say, from Roman to Italic, you had to change this golf ball, take it out, and physically put in a different one. So you can imagine the work that the devotees were doing for putting these books together, like the word-for-word meanings. Take out the ball, put in the ball, take out the ball, put in the ball, take out this ball, put in the next ball. That's just for word-for-word. And then for doing the diacritic marks, there was a special routine that you had to do. You had to type every page twice. There were so many things that had to be done. And these machines were sophisticated machines. They cost $5,000 each, which was, in those days, serious money. And we used to run them 24 hours a day. Yeah. Before I'd come to the movement, I'd spent one summer in the Merchant Marine, the United States Merchant Marine. And the system of work there is that you had 4 hours on and 8 hours off, so that you'd work from, say, 4 in the morning till 8 in the morning, and then again 4 in the evening till 8 in the evening. And some otherwise you'd have 8 to 12 a.m. and p.m., 12 to 4, and 4 to 8. That was how they arranged it. So we made a similar schedule for the typesetting, because the machines were very expensive and we had a lot of work to do, so they had to run around the clock. There was one girl I remember when we were in Boston. Boston is freezing. As much as Muscat is hot, Boston is cold in the winter, freezing, beastly cold. And this girl used to work in the basement on the 12 to 4 shift, you know, midnight till 4 in the morning, in the basement, cold. You know, we didn't have the money for proper heating back then. So it's like the cold basement in the middle of the winter, 12 o'clock till 4 in the morning, wearing gloves and typing. Devotees were so serious that they would be working that way. These machines we were working them so hard that they used to break down regularly. There was a service contract, so the servicemen were always coming. And when we finally retired the machines, one man from the company said, "These machines don't owe you anything." Nobody used those machines 24 hours around the clock, but that's what we were doing. So there's so many adventures we had at the press. It was a lot of fun. But before we left New York, we bought something new that was just coming into existence in those days, which was computerized typesetting equipment. This is also now ancient technology involving phototopography. It involved exposing light-sensitive paper. So the light would shine through a negative onto the paper, and then you develop that paper, and that was your text. Again, now this is all ancient. But anyway, we got that, and it was the computer that went with the machine was in a tower, you know, it was about this high. And it had a lot of flashing lights and little buttons and switches. You could switch the registers and so on. And it had a lot of memory. It had. We spent extra money and got memory boards. The memory boards were about, well, not the same shape as this table, but about the same size. You know, an extra memory board that you could and slip into the tower. It gave you an extra 8K of memory. So we had these machines, and then there was a big developing machine for the photosensitive paper. It was bigger than this couch is. The typesetting machine itself was also bigger than this couch is. The big machines. And then doing layout, and which was also something done by hand, and so many things going on. And Prabhupada came to Los Angeles, and he toured the press. And the system was we reach in our place, and Prabhupada would come in and see what we were doing, and someone would explain, "Oh, Prabhupada, he does this, and he does that." And so Prabhupada toured. He came to where I was. I was editing also. I used to sit on the floor with a little table, and when I think Tamal Krishnamurti said, "Prabhupada, he likes this," you know, because Prabhupada used to work that way. He would sit on the floor and have a little table. When I first came, he had like a little trunk, like a little box. That was his table. So Tamal Krishnamurti said, "Jayadvaita likes, you know, the system like you." Prabhupada said, "Advaita," he said, "non-different." encouraging. So Prabhupada was very much appreciated how things were set up there at the press. And the next morning, when he was on his morning walk, the press manager was there and the GBC, or the BBT trustee. And Prabhupada said that this is very nice. He said, when I was in India, I was dreaming of something like this. He said, so now you're 17 books behind. Because the book production took a long time, we tried to be very meticulous, do it carefully, proofreading, editing. And besides that, we were just slow. And Prabhupada was fast. So at that time, he was ahead by 17 books. He was working on Chaitanya Charitamrita, dictating. So there were like 15 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita that we were behind. Two volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam, fifth canto. So, and we were working at what we thought was a pretty good clip. Like every 2 months, we would come out with another book. Yeah, every two months, another book, with all the editing and typesetting and proofreading and layout and everything. So we were going as quickly as we could, and every 2 months, a new book would come out. But we were 17 books behind. And so on this walk, Prabhupada said, so now you have this, you know, great arrangement. So I think you can do these 17 books in 2 months. So, you know, when Prabhupada's saying something, you're never quite sure. you try to give the right answer. And so the BBT trustee said, Prabhupada, that's not possible. And Prabhupada said that impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. And he said, if I remember, that, yeah, if you can't do it, these 17 books in 2 months, then what is the use of you? And that's when the devotees realized that it wasn't just a, you know, kind of a toss-out proposal that I think you could do. It was like Prabhupada wants these books in 2 months. So otherwise, you're useless. That was. So then the devotees sat down and began to organize how they would do these books in 2 months. And it involved round-the-clock schedules. Everybody was always working. We skipped all the temple programs. You know, there's more morning program, evening program. Just we would chant our rounds, maybe go to Mangal Arti. That was it. The rest of the time, working. And we're in a system, you know, so when this is done, then it's ready for this. So we could be woken up at any time of day. Prabhu, could you proofread this page? Prabhu, they need this. So that we're always busy. And we had no time for Maya. There was just no time, absolutely no time for Maya. We were just chant our rounds, do the work, take some prasadam sometime, and sometime take some rest. Busy. And we brought in some more people. There was one girl, she was typing so fast. I'm a fast typist. I'm really, that's all I learned. People, sometimes ladies come with their children. We were talking about this earlier today. Ladies come with their children. They say, oh, could you bless him? So what kind of blessing do you want? His exams are coming, his education. So I said, Mataji, you got the wrong guy. I dropped out of high school. I left school in 12th standard. But before I left school, because I thought all this, you know, what is this stuff that they're teaching you? This is all useless. Who killed when, in what battle, when? Why do I care? Why do I have to know these things? But the one thing that I learned good in school was I learned how to type. That proved very useful. So I was quite a fast typist. But this girl they brought in, she was so fast that she was like 25 words a minute faster than I was. She was really fast. when she would type, her fingers, you'd look down at her fingers, all you'd see was a blur. She typed, I think, 90 words a minute, which is, for those who know typing speeds, that's like enormously fast. And I was humbled, you know, that this girl was that much faster than I am. Anyway, and then we had the printers to work with, because Prabhupada wanted finished books, not that we would finish our work in 2 months, but that the books would be finished in 2 months. So we had two printers. One was printing the text, another was printing the pictures. And then I think it went to a third place where they would bind the books. And we were ordering our own paper, so that had to be there. All of these things were coordinated. And the long and the short of it was that in 2 months, Prabhupada got his books, and he appreciated that, yes, it was done. I remember that later, maybe it was more than a year or so later, in Los Angeles, a letter arrived from our account representative at one of the presses, and it was like you know how you write letters to your clients and tell them how much you appreciate their business. So it was that kind of a letter addressed to Prabhupada, and it arrived there at the press in Los Angeles. And the man said, you know, what a privilege it was to work on these books. But as it's very unfortunate that this letter was not preserved, because as he went on expressing his appreciation of Srila Prabhupada's books, it became this eloquent letter that you're writing these books for the benefit of the whole world, and we feel that it's our good fortune to be able to assist you in printing these books. It was just a beautiful letter. It was just an account, you know, a businessman writing a letter to his client, but it was so wonderful that, well, it was just wonderful seeing that. We had a few people who worked with us. Our account representative for the magazine for Back to Godhead was also a very special person, Paul Blair, his name was. And he also became influenced by Krishna consciousness, so that apart from just representing his company, he began chanting Hare Krishna. And he told us that at work, when things get really rough, he says, I just close the door, take out my beads, and chant Hare Krishna. So he was a very nice man. He used to also work with us, thinking of different things that he could do to make the magazine better, using an extra color or doing something to improve the magazine. When his company finally folded, he was there with advance notice to let us know, although it wasn't company policy, to let us know what was going on and helping us get to the next person. So it was very, very nice that we saw that many people that we worked with in the publishing industry or the printing industry became involved in the Sankirtan movement. These publishers, the printers who we worked with, it was wonderful for them that it wasn't just an ordinary job. They felt also that there's something special about this work, because they could see how the devotees were working, how they were completely dedicated to publishing these books and publishing them on time, and publishing a lot of them, because when we published those 17 books, I think at the time it was the largest single printer ever placed on the West Coast of America. It was really a large order, because there were 17 titles and a lot of copies. Is there a tissue or something? Yeah, it's, we're here in the Arctic zone, heavy chatter. You're all going to be hot watching me. Okay, we'll turn it on again after a little while when you all start becoming uncomfortable. We'll We'll turn it on again. It's okay for now, but in 10 minutes or so, it won't be so okay. In Europe also, our Northern European PBT division is very busy publishing. They're publishing in so many different titles in so many different countries. They're publishing in German. They're publishing in Czech. They're publishing in Slovenian. They're publishing in Croatian. They're publishing in Lithuanian. They're publishing in Estonian. In Kazakh, the language of Kazakhstan. They're publishing in Russian. They're publishing in so many different languages, many, many, many languages. And they're very particular about quality there. They try to get good prices, of course, but the manager there, Brahma Muhurta, he said that I don't just try to get the lowest possible price. He said, I want a certain standard of quality, and I'll pay every penny agreed on, but I want my quality. And the printers that he works with know it. Because if you're a printer, you know, what do people know about printing quality? You print, and you deliver, and they got their job. But our BBT is so particular. He said if there's anything that goes wrong with the BBT job, he says every red light in the place goes off. Because they know that we want quality. Price also, but we want the quality. And Prabhupada wanted that. He didn't like books that were shabby. He didn't like just cheap looking. He wanted the books to be high quality because he wanted these books to be accepted in the universities, in the colleges, by the intelligentsia. He didn't want just throwaway books. He wanted the books to be accepted as a source of serious transcendental knowledge. This child is someone's child. Okay, she's on her way behind the door. Fantastic. We love doors. Well, we're talking about books. We've started a new BBT division called BBT Africa because we haven't really focused on African publishing. So that's just this past year we started a new division, BBT Africa, for which I'm responsible. And we were looking at some of Prabhupada's old instructions. The largest language in Africa, apart from English, you know what the largest language is in Africa, apart from English? Arabic, yes. Arabic's the number one language. All of North Africa speaks Arabic. So some devotee had come out with they were working on an Arabic translation. It seemed like it was ready for printing, but there was some question about the quality. Prabhupada said, whatever it is, he said, print it. He was interested in quality, but for Arabic, you know, it wasn't just quality. He wanted it out. That was another thing. And I had that personal experience. I was working on Bhagavad Gita as it is for a long time. And Prabhupada wasn't happy about how long a time it was. So he was writing to me about it. And he said, just now coming, I'm always hearing this. When is it going to be done? The whole world is waiting. And you're, you know, basically messing around. Get it out. He didn't like us to fuss over things. He was very time-oriented. Very time-oriented, that not that you work on it and work on it and work on it and perfect every little thing, and then in 20 years it's there. You wanted it. So that was an instruction. He was very keen to get the books out. And he was very keen to get books out in African languages. That was another another thing. Swahili, he was keen to get them published. There's 2,000 languages in Africa. And the Bible is published in 300. So that gives us something of a target, what we want to accomplish in PBT Africa. We had a meeting early with Srila Prabhupada on Back to Godhead. This must have been, again, 1968, 69. And at that time, Prabhupada was just teaching us how to have meetings. He began the meeting with kirtan, instructing us. And he spoke a little bit about, actually he spoke on that occasion about how he'd met his Guru Maharaj, and how his Guru Maharaj remarked that this boy likes to hear. He was talking about that. And he said that practically people don't know what the science of God is. That there's simply some speculations. He mentioned some various Indian teachers and said, but there's no substance. So we want to present this Back to Godhead in a very authoritative manner. He said someday it will be accepted like scripture. He said, so nothing non-conclusive, Prabhupada said, should be published in Back to Godhead. Conclusive means, Prabhupada said, the editors have to know the Siddhanta. There's some conclusions. Krishna consciousness means not just whatever I think, but there's some Siddhanta, some conclusions which are taught by the authorities. And Prabhupada wanted us to know those Siddhantas, those conclusions. Starting with, I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul, life is not meant for sense gratification, I'm part and parcel of Krishna, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna has different energies. There's so many different topics on which we have conclusive understanding. There are things that are apasiddhanta, that are against the siddhanta. Rupa Nuga Virutapa Siddhanta Dvantaharne said about Rupa Goswami. He wouldn't tolerate anything which was, or not about Rupa Goswami, about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He wouldn't accept anything which was contrary to the conclusions taught by Srila Rupa Goswami. So Prabhupada gave us that instruction that as editors, we have to know the conclusions. We have some siddhantas, Prabhupada said. One has to know. So if we're going to teach Krishna consciousness, we have to know those siddhantas. It's not a difficult thing, but one has to know. One has to read the books, one has to hear, and one has to know what is what. The books are meant for that. By reading the books, we'll know what is what, and we'll have it on the authority of Vedic literature, on the authority of the acharyas, not simply, I think this, I think that. One time Prabhupada came from Hawaii to New York, and he mentioned that the Honolulu Advertiser, the local paper, had written an article about his coming there. And the article had said, the writer had said, the Swami is a small man, but he has a big message. The Prabhupada liked that very much. Swami is a small... I was surprised, actually, because I thought, you know, when I first came, I first met Prabhupada by joining ISKCON. I joined first, and Prabhupada at that time had gone back to India, having had a stroke. He'd gone back to India. And then when I joined, he was just about on his way back to America. So when he came, that's when I met him. So I was hearing from him, about him, from all the devotees at that time. All was like about as many or as are over here, a dozen devotees. But they'd all had, practically all had personal association with Prabhupada. So the whole day, just all the time, devotees would talk about Prabhupada. And everything was Prabhupada said, then it was Swamiji. Swamiji said this, Swamiji said that, Swamiji said not to do this, Swamiji said do that, Swamiji said, and it was all firsthand Swamiji said. You know, later, Prabhupada one time said, so many times I hear Prabhupada said, and I have not said. There's a lot of, that happens also. But in those days, if someone said Prabhupada said, it's because they directly heard him say it, usually, or else they'd heard it from the person who heard it from Prabhupada. So there was a very nice atmosphere that way, where we were always hearing about Prabhupada, thinking about Prabhupada. Letters would come. Prabhupada ran the whole movement by mail. He didn't like telephone. He installed a telephone when he came to New York, and then people would call him up in the middle of the night, Swamiji, how are you? Prabhupada had the phone taken out. He rarely used the telephone. He really didn't. You can turn yours off. Thank you. Phones have become even worse now. They're mobile, so they can ring in every class. Those have come more recently. If your phone is not yet in silent mode, you could please silence it. We won't speak much longer, I guess. Anyway, it's getting a little late. But anyway, telephone calls in those days were expensive anyway, and especially from international calls. Now it's 5 cents or something, but in those days you'd spend a lot of money. And Prabhupada didn't like telephone. If something was very, very urgent, he would sometimes send a telegram. And on some few occasions, the telephone, but rarely. Otherwise, everything done by letter. And that means from coming from America, going to India, so that would be like maybe 2 weeks, at least a week, week and a half, 2 weeks. And then for the letter to return. So we used to wait for those letters, Prabhupada's letters coming to New York. And everybody, when the letter would come, it would be everybody, big excitement, and everybody would crowd around to see what was in the letter. We'd really hang on those letters and be guided by those letters, what to do in practical affairs, what to do in preaching, everything Prabhupada was guiding, and all by post. No email. Even at one time, there was a machine. We had one in the press. It was a kind of telex machine. This is also ancient technology. You have to explain to people now what a telex machine is. Anyway, it was a little machine about the size of, I can't even say a typewriter anymore, about the size of a laptop, but a little taller. And it had a sort of a telephone connection. So you could call, say, our printer in Japan, and you would type something, and it would make a paper tape, punched a paper tape with holes punched into it, which represented the letters. And then when you made your phone call and connected, you would feed your paper tape into a little reader, and it would send the message over the telephone line, and then it would print out on the other end on yellow, cheap yellow paper, all capital letters, slowly, slowly, tum, 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 tum. You'd be watching the word come off, you know, Saturday. Uh-huh. Telegram. So this is a telex machine, so you could install it in your business. We had one in New York. We had one in Los Angeles because we had two press offices, and we would communicate with Dynapon printers in Japan who did a lot of printing for us in those days. And Radha Balaba, I think it was, the press manager in Los Angeles, suggested to Prabhupada that wouldn't it be a good idea to install this in all of our temples so that the temples could communicate with one another. And Prabhupada said no. He said they'll simply use it for prajalpa, for gossip. And that was the telex machine. Now, of course, the internet is a gossiper's dream come true. Anyone who's interested in prajalpa, the internet is a 24-hour-a-day prajalpa machine. But Prabhupada he saw that this telex machine placed in the hands of the devotees will just be used for idle talk. But he said, no, it's not a good idea. And it's true, we had one in New York and one in Los Angeles, and apart from communicating with the printers, they would be used for prajalpa. Prabhupada was absolutely right. Another time there was some system. The devotees weren't always very honest, and some devotees in Boston figured out that you could cheat the telephone, that you could cheat the payphones. There was a certain washer, you know, those little round metal washers. There was a certain kind of washer that was the same weight as an American coin. And so you could buy these washers for 2 cents, and they'd be worth 25 cents. You could put them in the telephone, and you could talk. And so these devotees were talking between Boston and Los Angeles. And it actually created a big, big problem, because they would talk and talk and talk, and so many ideas would come out. And it created a serious administrative incident. They basically Maya acted, and Prabhupada said it was due to this cheap talk. It seemed like the devotees were getting a bargain. They could cheat and talk longer. But actually, Prabhupada was, for 5 cents at the time, he was sending a letter and communicating adequately. And these devotees, they could talk by telephone, but they used it for gossip and even for falling into Maya. So Prabhupada was careful about these things. The technology benefits us. We can use the printing press. We can use the internet. We can use so many things. But they can also use us. And Prabhupada talked about that technology means that you get some facility, but nothing's free. We all pay a price. You get the car. Now you can travel from one side of town to another in half an hour. But the result is that you now have to go half an hour to an hour to consult your doctor or to buy vegetables or whatever it is. So you get little convenience, but you get so much inconvenience, traffic and so many things. So Prabhupada pointed that out. In fact, he pointed it out because he came from one time from Los Angeles to New York, and he was so late before he got to the temple where all, it had simply been that he'd been stuck in traffic. So it had taken, he said, like 5 hours to come from Los Angeles, but another 5 hours to come from the airport. So he said he called it a humbug civilization. Humbug civilization. Simply material advancement, material advancement. He gave a story about material advancement that is just like increasing a fever of increasing a fever, and he gave the story that there was a man, his wife had a fever, and his maidservant also had a fever. So he called the doctor. The doctor examined both patients, and he said that, sir, your wife is all right, just has a little fever, but your servant has very serious fever. You'll have to look after her. So the wife was hearing from, one floor up, I demand a recount. She's only the servant and I'm the wife and she has a higher fever than me? What is this? So Prabhupada said, this is our material life, that we're thinking that the higher the fever, the more we're advanced. And the more we increase the mode of passion, the more we increase the mode of ignorance, the more we're increasing. So the increasing means advancement. No, Prabhupada said increasing means increasing our trouble. And we see that in the modern civilization, so much facility, so much advancement, so much, but the result is so much trouble. You get the car, and we're fighting. The Middle East is always at war for the sake of the car. And so many millions of people, literally millions of people, are killed for the sake of our cars and our convenience and so on. So Prabhupada was seeing these things. And Prabhupada, maybe just the last point, because I think it's getting a little late, that Prabhupada was very, very strong on the misdirected civilization of the world. He wasn't just a person who, you know, patted us on the head and said, be good, and do good things, and didn't just speak about the happiness of spiritual life or the benefit of spiritual life. He was also very, very strong about the viciousness and the uselessness of so-called materialistic advancement. In the name of education, in the name of science, in the name of social progress, in the name of philanthropy, in the name of this, in the name of that, so many things are going on which are actually making life worse, which are missing the point, because there's no Krishna consciousness. There's simply some dream of making this a better world. And Prabhupada was uncompromising and unbewildered by all of these things. He was very clear that this is not what human life is for, and this is missing the point. Just finally, he told my godbrother Giriraj Swami one time, he said, my Guru Maharaj never compromised, and I never compromise, and none of you should ever compromise. Now, that was Srila Prabhupada, totally convinced about Krishna consciousness and totally uncompromising. Hare Krishna. All glory to Shri. Yeah. Questions allowed? Yeah. Now, Dhruva, that's a young age. He joined at 5. I was 19. I was practically a dead man already. There are those who joined much later than I did and at a much more mature age, who were more advanced than I was, and, you know, spiritually, and had more faith and conviction. It's not just that you can lay claim, you know, I joined when I was 12, and therefore, you know, I have so much. It's not that. It's your good fortune. The fortunate person, it doesn't matter whether he joins at 5 or he joins at 50 or 75. If he's convinced about Krishna consciousness, his life is successful. Of course, it's an advantage to join young. You skip so much trouble. That's there. Of course, if I joined a lot younger, I would have skipped a lot more trouble. But anytime. Even Prabhupada said about his own career, because he first really came out into the world in his 60s, but Prabhupada said, better late than never. That you can also think, by the way, those of you who are growing older, don't think about just growing older and staying home and bouncing your grandchildren on your knee. Think about getting out. Think about retiring from householder life. And as Prabhupada did, he spent some years in Vrindavan simply doing bhajan and writing his books. And then he went out to spread Krishna consciousness. one time after Prabhupada came back to America, and he'd had that stroke. So one of my godbrothers wrote to him that, Srila Prabhupada, you should be. It suggested that Prabhupada not preach for a while, take care of his health. Prabhupada wrote back and said, my dear boy, if I did not preach, where would you be? So there's so many people who are in need of Krishna consciousness. And in your while you're in your student life or household life, you can give them the science of Krishna. And then at the appropriate time, retire from business, retire from family affairs, family management, and give your full time. Give your full time. You'll be happy. And you'll do so much good for others. You had a question? I'm not really a good person to tell you about. People ask me, you know, about my study method and so on. My study method is that I edited the books. So it was my job. So while editing the books, naturally you're studying them. You have to think about each line again and again and again. That was my study method. I saw that anyone who knew how to drive at that time was always driving. Anyone who had a driver's license was always being called, oh, Prabhu, could you? So I made it my business never to learn to drive. And I was interested in the books. So I made it my business to get into the book department. That was just my interest. So somehow or other, from the very beginning, I was in that department. So automatically, I was studying. But all right, for those of us who have a different job, there are so many devotees who are talented managers and time managers, and so you have to figure how you're going to manage your time, especially if you read together. Chanakya Pandit gives some. There's some Chanakya shlok. Maybe someone knows. That you should, different things you do with different numbers of people. You know that shloka? If you want to have a war, you do it with a lot of people. Make sure you've got a lot of people with you. If you want to study, then it's two people. Studying on your own, you know, you get drowsy or you forget to do it. But if you have two people, then you'll exchange ideas, you'll read to one another, you'll... More eager. So studying with others, if you study with one other person or two other people, then that increases your strength. And Chanakya Pandit says, eating you can do by yourself. Satam prasangat mama virya sambhado. Kapil Dev says that by... when we discuss Krishna Katha among devotees, then the actual potency is realized. Of course, keep a book with you, you know, when you go to work or when you're wherever you are. If you have a book with you, then you'll have the opportunity to read it. You can't read a book you don't have. That also applies to distributing. If you're able to keep a book, some books with you to distribute, then when you meet someone, then you're armed and ready. If you don't have the book, there's nothing you can do. So if you keep some books, I hear you've got ways of getting books. So keep some books so that when you meet some sympathetic or interested person, you can share that book, distribute that book, and keep a book for your own reading also. Even if you get 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Another way that you can get time for reading is take your television set, bring it up to the second floor of your house, open the window, and throw it out. Right? Yes. Well, that's very good. We have courses. In Mayapur and Vrindavan, we have formal courses that we're teaching. I think arrangements are being made for teaching courses over the internet also. I know in Dubai they have a lot of courses always going on. And if you can arrange similar things here, that's great. Formal education in Krishna consciousness. Just organize it. It's not, I mean, what do we do for these courses? Really, we just speak Krishna Katha in a little organized way, first this, then this, then this. That's the courses. So you can do that, systematically study Prabhupada's books, just arrange, okay, this for these 10 days or this 2 weeks. I don't know, what do you do in Ramadan? You have seminars. You know, that's a good time. Yeah, that's nice. Right. By Allah is all merciful and He gives us the month of Ramadan. So we can use that for Bhagavad Gita. Yes. I don't remember so much in the way of interesting questions. If you like, some of the questions that were sent when I was editor, you might find on my website, on jswami.info. If you go there, there's one correspondence that we had with some Hindu societies discussing about demigods and things like that. So some of the things you'll find there. When I was editor, my policy is that I used to like to get the contentious letters. The letters where they say, oh, I love the magazine, I used to kind of put those on the shelf, but the ones where they said, you know, this is rubbish, we hate this, this is, you know, how could this be true? Those were the letters I really looked for, and they made for fun. Yes. Oh, just excuse me while I'm thinking of it. We're publishing two English language versions of Back to Godhead these days, one from America and one from Bombay. The Bombay one, they're also quite getting into that spirit of finding all the nastiest letters or the ones with the tough questions and publishing those with their answers. I think they're doing a good job. Yes. Well, how to become determined is more or less the question. And we become determined by being determined. That Prabhupada, you know, how to be sincere? By being sincere. Oh, determination. But so much has to do with taking rest on time. That's an odd message to give at 10 o'clock. But as far as possible, if you're able to take rest early, then you can get up early. And getting up early gives you the best time. Even according to Ayurveda, the rest that you get before midnight is much more valuable than the rest that you get after midnight. So if you can, and it, according to, I guess, I don't know if it's Benjamin Franklin, anyway, standard American wisdom, early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy, and wise. So if you want to be healthy, wealthy, and wise, early to bed, early to rise. That really is practically, if there's one thing that I'd advise in terms of, you know, how to develop strength in our sadhana, it's that. Take rest early, get up early. Those are the things. It also helps if you eat light in the evening. That's both Ayurvedic advice and yoga. That if we eat heavy at night, then it's getting up early in the morning is practically a lost cause. It's much more difficult. And it's also you don't get proper rest because the body has to digest all of that while you're sleeping, which is harder to do. So if we're able to eat midday and then the evening, it's even standard karmi advice in America that you should eat breakfast like a prince, lunch like a king, and dinner like a pauper, right? So that's true. We accept that in Krishna consciousness. or in Ayurveda, that's also accepted. So if we eat light in the evening, then you know, then you're a little bit light, you're not heavy, and in the morning you can get up, you can chant Hare Krishna, you can read the book, you can do so many things before the world starts whirling around, and then it's yours, you know, you've got it, you're done for the day. Not that you say, well, that's it, I'm not going to chant anymore, but you've met your goals. You've been able to chant so many rounds, read so many pages, do your puja, whatever you want to do, all before the day gets started. Otherwise, once the day gets started and you're trying to fit it in between times, it's more difficult. Not impossible, but more difficult. Yes?
They were advancing very fast. Now the materialistic, attachment, all the advancement of, you know, all the technology and everything. So the people are, you know, most of them attract towards that. So the level of advancement, those times are, you know, very fast. But now it is comparatively.
It has nothing to do with that. Advancement is fast if you're serious about chanting Hare Krishna. There was so many crazy things when I joined in the world. And there are so many crazy things now. Only difference is that they're different crazy things. But they weren't less crazy then than they are now. The world was crazy in the past. It's crazy now. It will be crazy in the future. And those who are serious will be Krishna conscious and float above it. Padma Patram Ivambasa. Arabic Bhagavad Gita is available. Bhagavatam in Arabic? I don't think so. No. Bhagavad Gita, as it is available in Arabic. It's not widely available, but it's there. There's also an Arabic Bhagavad Gita website. You know about that. Okay, good. A lot of Chinese people in this country also. If you get Chinese books, you can distribute them. Today, the optical industry is full of Chinese ladies who are... They're from Japan? Philippines. But they weren't all from Philippines. Some of them, I think, are Chinese, huh? Mostly Philippine? Okay. Yeah, because they're from a similar background. China, there's so many restrictions, and we're spreading Krishna consciousness. Srimad Bhagavatam is published, at least two cantos, maybe three cantos by now, in Chinese. Bhagavad Gita is in Chinese. Quite a number of books. There's a book called Hidden Glory of India, which presents Krishna consciousness in a cultural way, which is published in China, with the permission of the Chinese government. I think even Bhagavad Gita, as it is, has permission from the Chinese government. So it's going on in China. In Iran, we're publishing our books in Farsi. The local devotees are publishing. So everywhere. The books will go everywhere. I could tell you stories of how books will go everywhere, but that'll take us further into the night. In Middle East. To distribute books to the Arabs is difficult. To distribute books to the Indians is easy. Or to the Filipinos. Or to anyone but the Arabs. If you distribute books... Actually, the Arab-speaking people would also be very interested in our books. My assistant... Because we started BBT Africa, so my assistant who was with me in South Africa went back to the UK, but I asked him that on the way back, book your flight through Cairo. So he did. He spent a few days in Cairo, and he found very good interest in Cairo also. He had some Indian contacts who were, of course, receptive. But apart from that, there was one Egyptian boy who'd come to Mayapur as part of an interreligious function. And he was very interested when he heard that this boy was coming. Oh, we're so eager to, you know, my friends and I, you know, that devotee is coming. They're seriously interested. And he was holding two sets of programs, one for the Indians and one for the Arabs, but the Arabs were asking to come to the Indian programs also, Bhagavad Gita class. So there's definite receptivity everywhere. It's just that we're so successful among the Indian community in the Gulf countries that we're a little reluctant to preach to the Arabs, lest we jeopardize things on the Indian side. So that's it's sort of the misfortune of all of these Arabs that all of you are here, because if you weren't here, we could just preach to them, and we'd have nothing to jeopardize. But since you're all so enthusiastic about Krishna consciousness, we can't jeopardize these programs by preaching to the Arabic people. We're a little reluctant to do that. But at least preach to everyone else, and maybe we'll find some ways also for communicating to the Arab people that we should do, but that has to be done with thought and discretion. But we have to do it also. These people, they can benefit so much from the message of Krishna, and they'll be interested also. That's for sure. That's for sure. But anyway, we're happy that there are fewer Indian people in Egypt. We're targeting Egypt as one place where we want to focus. Definitely Arabic people will, and some already we have some Arab devotees. There's one Kuwaiti devotee who's living in Delhi now, who's a disciple of Gopal Krishna Maharaj. Some others also. Mm-hmm. How much time do we have? What should I do? Tell me. Tomorrow. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.